It's good to see y'all here. It's good to have Chloe back for some energy and some hugs. Did you forget Monty again? All right, we are on lesson 95. We talked a little bit about the power transition between Elijah and Elisha last week. We've just been pretty steadily going through the Bible front to back. Seems like that's probably how it's going to go for the rest of the time. We talked a little bit about prophets and their jobs last week and what they're called to do. And this week, you have that continuation where Elisha starts fulfilling that role. He just got this role given to him. He watched his mentor, Elijah, get taken off into heaven. And now he's gotta do his own thing and be the guy. And so we start getting into Elisha the... Oh, that's way better. Yeah. Now I can way hear myself. Now I'm way too loud. We start to hear, start to see Elisha start to fulfill that role. And in this, I think in y'all's books, it's going to say Elisha and the Syrians. And we talked a little bit about Elijah and the weight he carried, that not only did God have him appoint the king of Israel at a time where there's a separated kingdom, but also he appoints the next king of Syria. And so this isn't someone who is just known to a small group of people. And you'll see this. You get a little glimpse into how some of this spreads. But we're going to talk, we're going to be in 2 Kings chapter 5. And we're going to read, not quite through chapter 5. Well, we're going to read quite a bit. And it's a story that hopefully rings some bells. And that you see Christ reflect later on. And it's important to start to pick up on some of this, because as I've said earlier, as we have talked about it previously, we definitely, when we're reading the Bible, it's a congruent story that points to Christ. And through all these stories, you see these sometimes the same person, you see them fulfill both roles, but the Christ role, where he's a reflection of what that's to look like and what's to come. And then you also see the opposite of that. And the same people usually have the cycles in their own life. I talk a lot about the repetition and the cycles. And you see just Abraham and his highs and lows, and Isaac. And you just keep going down the line and you see all these highs and all these lows of God's people. And continuing on's no different, but the neat part, not the neat part, but a neat part about how the Bible's written and how it's presented to us is all these stories tend to give us little glimpses into what's to come, little glimpses of Christ, either the reason why he is to come or a reflection of what he's to be like. And so in this story, Elisha's starting to take the reins, and that's happened previously. And Elisha's known biblically for being a prophet that does quite a few miracles. And not all the prophets are viewed in that way, but Elisha does, in fact, do quite a few miracles. He does miracles that reflect Moses in parting the Jordan, and we see a lot of repetition coming through his reign. Again, I think we're short to I don't have very long to talk about Elisha, so I will do my best to bring forth some of these stories, but please, please go read. As we're reading and as I'm skipping chapters and all this stuff, since we're trying to move at a quick pace, I say quick, I think it's supposed to take 4 years, but it seems very fast when you're reading it and studying it. Please go fill those gaps and chew on that for yourselves. But today we're going to be in 2 Kings chapter 5. We're talking about Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and in high favor, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was a mighty man of valor, but he was a leper. Now the Syrians on one of their raids had carried off a little girl from the land of Israel, and she worked in the service of Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "Would that my lord were with the prophet who is in Samaria. He would cure him of his leprosy." So Naaman went in and told his lord, "Thus and so spoke the girl from the land of Israel and the king of Syria. Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So he went, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, which read, "When this letter reaches you, know that I have sent you Naaman, my servant, that you may cure him of his leprosy." And when the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man sends word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? Only consider and see how he is seeking a quarrel with me." But when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, he sent to the king, saying, "Why have you torn your clothes? Let him come to me now, that he may know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and chariots and stood at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored, and you shall be clean." But Naaman was angry and went away, saying, "Behold, I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call upon the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and cure the leper. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in rage. But his servants came near to him and said to him, "My father, it is a great word the prophet has spoken to you. Will you not do it? Has he actually said to you, 'Wash and be clean'?" So he went down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God. And his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. There's a lot to unpack, but we're going to do our best in the next several minutes to unpack it. Again, I've talked about it. Those of you who know, hopefully maybe some of y'all have watched The Chosen or at least a little bit of it. But this leprosy was, I think The Chosen kind of hit home for me a little bit. Because you think about people who are just outcast and you don't want to be around necessarily, and you don't necessarily realize the extent of their fear of it. Nobody wanted it. You're considered unclean. You get cast out from your family. You're in isolation with a bunch of other people that nobody wants. And so this man in his position, I want to bring up a couple things, because right at the beginning, Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and in high favor, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. So God's already playing a crucial role. This is a leper who's not supposed to be in this position, but through God, God has put him in this spot. And I think over and over we can point to the fact that when God does this, when Christ, when he's to come, does these miracles, what's it supposed to be? to the glory of God. So God puts this guy in a high rank. This is predating Christ. Man, I got a cheerleader over here. I love it. We got Chloe and Bo giving the energy. So we get this depiction of a guy who's not supposed to be in this spot. And I do think we need to realize that, and I think your books talks about it, that leprosy is a wide-ranging disease in these times. It gets described, a lot of skin diseases are called leprosy biblically. But you have this guy who's in this high position. Who puts him there? God. Is he part of Israel? No. God has put this man in place in a foreign place, not amongst his chosen people. But what happens, and this is, again, predating Christ. Christ comes and does similar things, and people are looking at this, but he's amongst his own people. And when this guy is doing it, long predating Christ, they're in the same circumstance where things are not going great in Israel. We have that right now. They still have a kingdom, but it's divided, and there's animosity, and there's fighting. And we just read about how God was to hand over Israel into the Syrian army. And you see this incredible cycle where God pulls them out of captivity and then puts them back in, lets them fall back into somebody's hands. And we have read stories of Israel in hiding, and these prophets bringing them out, or these judges bringing them out. And we're in this big, vicious cycle of that is what's happening. And so this man from a foreign place that they're held captive by comes and asks the king of Israel. And what's the king's response? Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man sends word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? God puts him in his lap, and what's the king's response? The person that everybody should be looking towards, but I think oftentimes in these cycles, who do we look towards? Is the prophet, right? Because the prophet's the guy that's keeping everybody on track. But in this instance, he comes to the king, and his first response isn't, "Hey, God, you put this guy on my doorstep. What am I to do?" His first spot's to tear his clothes and to make a big spectacle and say, "Who am I? Am I God to kill or to make alive?" And then Elisha hears about it, and he starts playing his role. And so I'm going to stop there for a second. Let's focus on that. How many times in our existence do we negate something that God's put in our lap because, well, who am I? How many times have you talked yourself out of having a hard conversation with someone because you're like, well, who am I to them? How many times have you pushed someone away because you're asking yourself, who am I? And the king's doing this exact same thing. He's sitting there and he's going, who am I? Which is to everybody a logical question, right? Who am I to it sounds like a good line. Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man sends word to me? And what is his response? What's the only reason he can figure out in his head for why this would be happening? Syria is seeking a quarrel with me. Because if I can't heal this guy, they're going to be mad. And so he starts going back in on himself, and he starts worrying about it. All the responsibilities and all the stuff that he's got going on, as I imagine a king would. Because if you've ever had employees, even a small amount, sometimes you're probably beating your head over a rock going, why? Or just not knowing what to do, because in your heart, your desire is to take the best care of them. And when something happens that might prohibit that, our mind typically goes to the worst place. And so I imagine this king of a nation is sitting there going, oh man, I can't do this right now. And God's saying, hey, listen, I put this guy on your doorstep. This captive Israeli girl speaks so confidently. Oh, if he had only known my Lord in Israel, he would heal him. That sounds like the good news, doesn't it? Man, how many people do you talk to? We need to focus on this little girl. She seems like such a minute part of the story. But what does she do? Her captors, the people that she should probably disdain more than anybody, her captors that took her away from everything she knows, sees a man with leprosy and says, "Hey, boy, do I know a guy. Boy, do we know a guy." And how often do we suppress that? Whether it's out of disdain or discomfort, how often do we not tell them, sick people? Because there's not a person in this room that would not raise their hand if I asked who's a sinner. Hopefully everybody in here raised their hand if I ask who's been saved. And that's what this little girl, and I love when Christ comes, you have this depiction of how he takes care of the kids, how he loves the kids, and how he talks about them. And what I see in this little girl that has been captured, put in a poor circumstance, is that she knows. In her little innocence. You watch it with Brooks. He's so innocent. And you just don't want anything to happen to that, right? You probably all, your kids in your lives, have thought, man, I hope that he can protect this aspect of who he is right now. I hope that God cements this into him or her. Imagine God's got just this big smile on his face when this little girl has somebody who she shouldn't really like, and she sees a man who's sick with a disease that is looked down upon by everybody, which should make him an outcast, and she goes, "Hey, I got good news. I know a guy that can take that away." What a powerful statement. That's the good news. This one line. And what happens when this girl gives him hope? He goes and immediately talks to the king and says, "Hey, I heard about this guy." What does the king do? Because this is his right-hand guy. This is a guy that has won in battles. This is a guy that he's got every right to shove out of everything. Because he's a leper. Yet for whatever reason, the king keeps him right there. So there's probably a level of love there. And his immediate response is, "Here, take all this stuff and a letter written by me to the king of Israel, and let's go find this guy." I think so often we miss